A word of caution about this segment of The Exchange. There may be descriptions of war violence that could be disturbing to some listeners. I Live to Tell the World is a book by journalist Elizabeth Marin, published by Oregon State University. It presents 13 inspiring profiles of men and women who have endured unthinkable cruelty, only to resume productive lives in their new homes right here in Oregon. The book inspired a theatrical stage production that will be performed on February 1st at Oregon State. One of the storytellers in the performance, titled I Live to Tell the World Live, is Rama Youssef. She escaped the war in Syria as a young girl. Rama joins The Exchange as one of my two guests. Welcome, Rama.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Also joining the conversation is Dr. Catherine Hubler. Dr. Hubler is a historian in the School of History, Philosophy, and Religion at Oregon State. She is also the editor of Listening to Survivors, Four Decades of Holocaust Memorial Week at Oregon State University. Dr. Hubler also serves as co-chair of the OSU Holocaust Memorial Program. Welcome, Professor.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here.
Listeners can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Rama, let's start with you. I'm anxious to hear your story, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, tell us about your life right now. How's life in Oregon?
I actually live in Los Angeles right now, but Oregon is my home, so I'm not currently in Oregon. But life is, you know, in Los Angeles, it's pretty awesome. Amazing weather. Of course, we have the fires going on, and we're all staying safe, praying out to everybody who has been affected by the fires.
So tell us about the upcoming stage performance of I Live to Tell the World Live.
Yeah, this is a very special program to my heart. I actually began working with the founder around the time I turned 18, and I joined a bunch of talented individuals and other storytellers who came from difficult backgrounds to share their stories and spread empathy around the listeners and spread coexistence. So I have been sharing my story on this platform for about a few years now, where I go to different schools, events, and speak about my upbringing from Syria and how I navigated my life in the United States when I came here.
So you're traveling around California or up and down the West Coast?
I do, yes, both. So I do travel up and down the West Coast. Mostly in Oregon is where I do speak about this topic and where I speak with, you know, I love to tell my story. For instance, this weekend, I'm speaking at OSU, Oregon State University, on Saturday. It will be with the same program that I love to tell my story.
And Professor, you edited the book, Listening to Survivors. Tell us about it and some of the lessons we can learn from stories told by survivors of war.
Oh, yes, yeah, certainly. Yeah, so the book really represents the culmination of the work of the Holocaust Memorial Program for the last 3 years. We've had about 30 Holocaust survivors visit our campus and speak to audiences here. And we've had a number of these really powerful testimonies recorded and available on our YouTube site. But we really wanted to get the messages out there. About half of the speakers that have come to campus have settled in Oregon, have spoken with many schools throughout the state over really since the late 80s, early 1990s. And so we thought with this moment, with Oregon's new mandate in K-12 schools for Holocaust and genocide education, that this would be really the prime moment to really get these fantastic messages together, in large part because many of the Holocaust survivors who came forward to start to engage in public outreach did so because They were witnessing rising anti-Semitic incidents, growing white supremacist movements within Oregon, particularly in the Portland area, and also were responding to Holocaust denial and the visit of a prominent Holocaust denier to the state in the early 1990s. And so the messages that they bring forth, you know, I think are really powerful when it comes to resistance, resilience, the importance of protecting human dignity, of, you know, paying attention to government-sponsored oppression and persecution of vulnerable groups, and ultimately coming forward to share their stories so that we can learn from them. They've gone to great lengths, you know, and visit and have to revisit really painful memories, but feel that it's important to do so in order to try to ensure a hopefully more peaceful and more tolerant future.
My guests are Rama Youssef, one of the storytellers in a performance at Oregon State titled I Live to Tell the World Live, and Dr. Catherine Hubler, a historian in the School of History, Philosophy, and Religion at Oregon State, where she serves as co-chair of the Holocaust Memorial Program. And speaking of painful memories, Rama, you grew up in Syria, and I'm going to ask you to just kind of retell your story. Tell us about your family and your life there.
Yeah, so I grew up in a very unique family. They anchored through many challenges. Beginning before the war, actually, I'm from a village called Madaya. And it's on the outskirts of Damascus. And my family, the way before the war in the village, had been always targeted by the regime for their ongoing resistance. And so I, you know, grew up knowing that, like, don't say anything about the government, don't bring it up, don't ever talk about the president in your school, especially because of my own background, not just because, you know, I'm in Syria, but because I'm from that village. And I grew up in a very special family. Being from a village, that's where the farmers are. It's like the rural areas here in Southern Oregon and Northern California. So very similar life. And I grew up as the fourth daughter. My father always wanted a son, as it's very traditional to have a son to kind of help you with your business, with your life. But that never happened to him. So I was, in a way, his fourth son, you know. I kind of played on that role with my dad, and I was very, very close to him growing up. And I went to school in the city. So a lot of times was spent in the city more than the village to make sure that I go to a good school, like get good education growing up. And my life, you know, was just filled with memories, love, and a lot of good food, a lot of holidays. Eid was very special to us as a holiday. That's right after Ramadan. That's always been special to my heart since I was a little kid.
So you're
definitely
Muslim?
Grew up. I am Muslim, yes.
Okay, go on.
So I grew up with a lot of traditions, values, pretty conservatively compared to our life here in the United States. I remember a very fun childhood. I spent a lot of my time playing in the streets, honestly, up until the start of the war. A lot of things shifted. And truthfully, I just kind of, you know, grew up thinking that I'll just, you know, end up getting married like my sisters have done before me. So education is very big in Syria, but it wasn't big in my family, in my own family. A lot of other people went to school, went to university. That was a must. Just my family valued different things. A lot of women in our family, the value was to just get married, start a family, have kids. And that's what my sisters had done, and that's what I thought I was going to do.
And how old are you now?
I am 25.
So take us back to the day that you first experienced war. How old were you?
I was 12 years old. That was the very first time I understood that war meant death. And that's when I was in school. I was in seventh grade. Of course, there had been other minor incidents, but that one was very close to home. A car bomb blew up about two blocks away from my school. And I remember the windows where the girls were sitting. I went to an only girls school. So where we were sitting, the side of the windows, the glass shattered everywhere. We fell on the ground because of the pressure. And about a few moments later, another explosion went off. And of course, we didn't know it was a car bomb or what kind of bomb it was. But all we knew was that what we were seeing on TV as kids came to us. And we didn't know, you know, we had no school drills, right? You can't be prepared for war. And at the time, all my teacher was able to do was scream to have us duck under our desks in our class. So we don't have, you know, we don't get hurt any further. And I remember after the second explosion took off, my first reaction was just to like get out of my class and run down the hallways, taking my friends with me. And of course, at the time I had called my mom from the class and I told her, you know, please come pick us up. There's something going on outside. But she had already heard it because Syria, you know, Damascus is very small. So an explosion anywhere, you would hear it. You would, of course, you might not feel how big it is, but you will hear something. And I called my mother and she was already on her way. And as soon as she came, we ran to her car. The school was chaotic. It was super. I've never in my life had a chaotic school. You know, when you're a little kid and you just wish for school to get canceled for any silly reason. Well, that was the day that I really did not want school to get canceled. I just did not want to believe what was happening. None of us kids believed. And I remember when we got in the car, we were all crying, screaming. The girls took my phone to call their parents. My mother was panicky, crying. We went home, and my mother thought this is very close to home. Two blocks away was a middle school, and people actually there got hurt. They were injured. They went to the hospital. So it could have been easily us. And that's when my mom tried to exhaust all of her ways to get me at least out of Syria.
Is your family still there?
My father is still behind. He, unfortunately, were not able to make it out those past 13 years. And a lot of people were able to make it out 2011, 2012, and 2013. Anybody after that, it became super difficult, almost impossible. It became almost a dream to make it out, even just to Lebanon, which is a surrounding country, or Jordan as well. My father is still behind.
Professor, you teach courses about the Holocaust and other genocides and modern human rights movements. How often do you get to hear directly from survivors of war like Rama?
Yeah, within our classrooms, we engage with testimonies and firsthand accounts from survivors that come a lot through some of the testimony that's been collected for war crimes tribunals, as well as through journalistic sources and journalistic profiles. But in terms of direct, you know, personal testimony and personal accounts within our classroom face to face, it's quite uncommon, which is why we're really pleased that the immigrant story is and all of the participants are coming to OSU campus. Last night we had a great panel featuring Saron Kut, who also was a survivor of the Cambodian genocide, who will also be a part of the performance that Rama will be engaged into on this Saturday. So we're really excited to have that opportunity. We've been lucky at OSU to have the Holocaust Memorial program, so we have been able to bring in survivors from the Holocaust to speak to our OSU campus audiences, as well as to bring them into some of the Corvallis schools over the years. although those opportunities have been more rare as Holocaust survivors are aging, and more than one event is a bit much to ask. But we've been really lucky to have had those experiences, and we'll continue to do them as long as possible.
Professor, before the break, we learned more about Rama's background and the story of how she escaped the war in Syria as a young girl. And now she's a young woman living here in the United States. In your work with survivors of war and capturing oral histories, what important lessons can we learn from the stories told?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that one of the most important things that comes out of these personal stories is, what really stands out to me is how is really the emotional aspect of the stories, especially given the nature of the experiences. I mean, individuals, in order to tell their story, must revisit a lot of really painful experiences that it's even hard to find the words for. Yet they do so because they see that some of the forces, that they think it's important to spread their stories, because some of the forces that have led to warfare and conflict and hatred are still around today. And so I think some of the most important lessons that at least we've come across in the Holocaust Memorial Week program, and a lot of the testimonies that Holocaust survivors have brought forth in our program, really relate to working to spread messages of tolerance, especially when it comes to, I'm thinking in particular of Holocaust survivor Laurene Nussbaum, who's come to OSU a few times. She was a professor at Portland State University. She was born in Germany, and her family settled within Amsterdam. Her life story really follows a similar trajectory to Anne Frank's. She and her family were able to obtain a special status. They had fabricated a story that her mother was really not Jewish, and so being a half Jewish family, being categorized that way, allowed them to avoid deportation. And Laurene Nussbaum, while she was in Amsterdam, was befriended Anne Frank and Margot Frank, and so she has some really poignant recollections of the girls early on before the invasion by the Nazis. But Laurene Nussbaum, she was asked by audiences at Oregon State University whether or not she was bitter, whether or not she felt that the Dutch citizens should have put up a greater fight against the Nazis in order to object to the deportation of Jews. And her look at it, she recalled saying, it seems like it should be better about it, but she says, I'm not. She says that what preceded during the Holocaust proceeded often so incrementally, and folks believe that, well, if I could just wait this part out, or if this is as bad as it gets, it won't be so bad. But of course, they didn't know exactly what was to come. But Laurene said, often though the worst things start out as just small inconveniences, maybe small assaults on liberties and rights. And those things can turn into something much worse, but you don't necessarily know it at the time. And so I felt that Laurene's message of just empathy and understanding, but also her message of the importance of vigilance, I felt was really important for audiences to hear.
I think that hearing those stories are really important because they pull us into an environment that most of us are privileged to have never experienced. But it provides a sense of compassion and understanding and empathy. Of course, it's amazing that people are able to tell their stories over and over for the benefit of others. And Rama, that's what you'll be doing. You'll be retelling your story on stage in front of a live audience. How do you prepare for that?
Well, I prepare with a purpose. I think it's really hard for me sometimes to stand and share my trauma in the open air, but I always remind myself of my purpose. I think one big lesson for me is that I have learned from my experience is coexistence. And my purpose in coexistence is always recognizing that, like, no matter where we come from and what our journeys have been, we all share a basic humanity. We have the same fears, we have the same hopes and dreams. We all want better for ourselves and our families. So when I stand and I tell my story, I remember that I'm doing it for that reason, to create that shared empathy between me and other people. Because you'll be surprised how often I hear people saying, I relate to you in one way or another. And remembering that is what gives me strength to stand up on stage each time, whatever stage it is, whatever opportunity I get to share my story and put that in my mind.
So how often do you have contact with your family and friends back home?
At first when I left Syria, it was very, very difficult. I think what was difficult is trying to find out who I am after I left. And I lost a sense of who I was. So it was really difficult to connect with my father and my friends. And also my mother, we came here together to the United States, but then she actually ended up having to leave because of immigration complications in 2012. And at the time I was 12 years old and I haven't seen her since. And that created a lot of barriers between me and my family, is no longer knowing who they are and them no longer knowing who I have become. And I had to work very hard because I wanted that relationship. I think family is very important. It's what keeps you grounded to me. It's a huge value. It's a huge asset to have in your life. So I worked super hard. As soon as I got to college, I felt, I was a little bit more mature, and I did a lot of self-work. I did a lot of reading, a lot of therapy, and I was able to find common ground to talk to my family at least every day. So right now I speak to them almost every single day. My friends, I recently reconnected with my friends in Syria, the same friends that were with me in that classroom when the bomb went off nearby. I actually, reconnected about a month ago, and what a coincidence, yes, we just connected, and she has gotten married, moved to Jordan, and it just felt so wholesome to see her live again, just to see her okay, to see her, it kind of, my guilt went away as a survivor too, because I had always carried that with me, that I left and I'm okay and I have a very good life in America and they don't. So now I'm able to live with myself again and talk to them without guilt and fear.
My guests are Rama Youssef, one of the storytellers in a performance at Oregon State titled I Live to Tell the World Live, and Dr. Catherine Hubler, a historian in the School of History, Philosophy, and Religion at Oregon State, where she serves as co-chair of the Holocaust Memorial Program. Professor, Rama mentioned guilt. Do you hear that?
Oh, certainly. Many of the Holocaust survivor speakers that have visited OSU survived as children and teenagers. And frequently, they were the only members of their both immediate family and extended family to have survived the war. That was really certainly the case for many of the survivors who came out of Poland. And that sense of guilt, pervaded the lives of many of the folks who've come through OSU, many of the Holocaust survivors. And in some cases, it's something that took them years to really deal with, through the sort of hard work that Rama is describing. Psychologist Jack Terry, who visited OSU, I think, back in the 20-teens, who has since passed away recently, Jack Terry ended up becoming a psychologist and set up a practice in New York City, specifically to reach out and help other survivors of the Holocaust who tended to suffer from depression and, of course, survivor guilt. Some of the survivors who have visited OSU have described, you know, working through not only some of the trauma and guilt that they felt by engaging in outreach, by making meaning and finding meaning from their lives and from the suffering, to engage in outreach, to speak to young people, to share their experiences. And by doing so, and some of them also worked through the process by penning memoirs as well, as a way of actively remembering and bearing witness to the communities they lost, to the loved ones they lost, and as a way of working to try to revive a sense of that community and remember those who they've lost, so that their survival could be used to amplify, and their life now and their life force now could be used to amplify knowledge about their lost cultures and families.
Rama, how do you replace here what you lost there?
Since I grew up here, I have gained a lot of different understanding from the American culture, and I still have my Syrian self within. I left when I was 12, and I'm currently 25, so I lived half of my life in Syria and half of my life in America. So how I replace what I have lost is by creating my own community, finding support within my community, and that has been an ongoing thing since I came to this country. I have an amazing community behind me, people who, without their help, I would not be here today. So definitely creating that sense of community and support, and realizing that you are, what happened to you is not your fault, and being able to live with that and creating those lasting, amazing friendships, that has really, really helped me personally.
Well, we have about a minute left. So Rama, I want to ask you, beyond the performance on February 1st at Oregon State, what's next on the horizon for you?
I am planning on going to law school. I'm currently applying to law schools, and I'm hoping that I get accepted where I would like to go this year so I can start my journey. I would like to continue my work in civil rights and immigration. I currently work for a nonprofit organization that defends civil rights for anybody affected in America. So that has been really inspiring for me and has helped me translate my own lived experiences into meaningful advocacy, and I would like to keep doing that work.
So, Professor, we have about just a few seconds. Any advice for others out there, war survivors?
I would say, Rama probably would have better advice than I would in this regard. But, reaching out to a community, trying to find folks who have shared similar experiences. We've been talking about survivors who engage in outreach work, but I think that that puts people in really vulnerable position. And so before that kind of outreach work can happen, I think doing, taking care of oneself and trying to find communal support, I think is really important, an important first step.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time for today's exchange. Thank you, Rama, for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Professor, for sharing your insights.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.